This meeting is now being recorded.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our podcast on antitrust law. I'm Sarah Wheeler. I work part-time in the Office of Career Services at NYU School of Law, and it's our pleasure to be joined by Jeffrey Schinder, who is a managing partner of Constantine Cannon's New York office, specializing in antitrust counseling and litigation. Jeffrey also previously served as special counsel to the FCC and is on the advisory board of the American Antitrust Institute and is a graduate of NYU's LLM program in 1994. Without further ado, we are going to go into a question and answer portion with Jeff about his career path and his practice area. Jeff, I'm going to start by asking you some questions about your own career path. Can you just give us a brief introduction of sort of how you got into antitrust law? Where did you receive your first law degree, and what type of work did you do before you came to NYU to get your LLM?
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me. I graduated law school in Canada in 1991. I'm a graduate of Osgoode Hall Law School in Toronto, and as part of the sort of career development process in Canada under the British system, you have to article for a law firm. You're characterized as an articling student. I think it's equivalent to being a first-year associate in a firm. And I started out in a fairly large Toronto firm. At the time it was called Goodman & Goodman. I think it's now called Goodman's. It's one of the top firms in Toronto. And as an articling student at Goodman's, I got a taste of what, under Canadian nomenclatures characterizes competition law, where I had to work on a file involving the essential facilities doctrine, where I had to research U.S. case law under the essential facilities doctrine, because there wasn't a lot of jurisprudence in Canada at the time. This was 1991, and the Canadian Competition Act was maybe 5 years old. So at the time, I don't think, I think today there would be a lot of developed jurisprudence in Canada, but at the time there wasn't. So I had to immerse myself in U.S. law, and then that began my interest in antitrust law, which led me to the LLM program at NYU when I joined the program in 93 and graduated in 94.
And where did you work immediately after you completed the LLM?
While I was at NYU, I was a research assistant for professors First and Fox, which I continued to do after I graduated, at least for Professor First, while I was looking for a job. And working with them, I got to say, was enormously, gratifying both intellectually and professionally, and they helped me think through where I wanted to work. I got interviews at some big firms here in Manhattan, but Constantine Cannon, the time it was called Constantine and Associates, was formed, and it was sort of like manna falling out of heaven for me, because I was open to doing something a little different, where I wanted to get a sort of big firm, major case kind of experience, but I wasn't necessarily wedded to going to a big firm. I'd experienced that in Toronto. The Toronto firms are very similar in how they're structured and function to the New York law firms. And, I was open to something a little different, a little more entrepreneurial. So I relied on Eleanor Fox and Harry First to help me with my due diligence into Lloyd Constantine, who was the principal of Constantine, what was then called Constantine and Associates. Lloyd had testified in Justice Breyer's hearings and was, a somewhat known and controversial figure, brilliant lawyer, who ultimately became one of my mentors. And, the result was I interviewed with this new firm and was their first entry-level hire in October of 1994, and I'm still with the firm over 20 years later, and I'm one of the managing partners of the firm. which if you'd asked me in 1994, would that be your career arc? I would have said highly unlikely that I would be at the same place and running it over 20 years later with offices around the world. But here we are. It's been a fun ride.
And are there particular features of Constantine Cannon that have made it such a successful fit over such a long period of time? And I ask, just as students think about what to look for in an employer themselves, especially if they're interested in antitrust law, your perspective on what's kept you happy at the same firm for so long could be helpful.
Well, I go back to what I said in my earlier answer, that what was really interesting to me was to situate myself at a boutique firm that enabled me to get hands-on experience right away and doing, big-time work. We have prosecuted and defended some of the largest antitrust cases that have happened in the last 20 years. I say that with not an ounce of hyperbole. And I had a front row seat in all of that and was able to get enormous experience, which for me was critical. I was a little older than the average graduate because I had experience, essentially a year of practice in Toronto. I'd gone back to school. I'd done my LLM, like I'm sure many of your students. That situated me three or four years older than the average entry level lawyer, and I really was hungry to get experience quickly and not be put in a hierarchical environment where we often see a lot of candidates who roll out of big firms. They've been there 4, 5, 6 years. You sit them down and you ask them, well, what have you done? Have you taken a deposition? Have you defended a deposition? Have you been allowed to argue substantive motions? Have you done anything other than document review? And sometimes the answers are yes, but often they're depressingly no, I'm second chair, this. I've never prepped a witness on my own. And, you get people who are hungry for those kinds of experiences, and they come to us as mid-level associates with fairly meager experience. Well, so Constantine Cannon gave me the ability to get a lot of experience very quickly, such that, when we went to trial in the Visa check case, which was the first major case to put us on the map, where we got a multi-billion-dollar settlement against Visa and MasterCard, at the time it was fairly characterized as the largest antitrust case in U.S. history. And who knew I was going to end up getting involved in something so massive and exciting? I was on the trial team heading into trial in 2003, and I was in my 30s. The kind of opportunity I would not have had, or likely wouldn't have had, if I had gone to a more hierarchical environment. The other thing I'll say about Constantine Cannon over the years is, my workflow, my life, my responsibilities, has changed, dramatically as I've gone from being, junior associate to mid to senior to partner to senior partner to running cases, basically commanding all of my own work, generating business. While I've been at the same place for over 20 years, the demands of the career of the profession have changed dramatically, and in ways that have constantly kept it stimulating for me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's really helpful. So we're going to shift a little bit to talking about your practice area. Imagine that you're talking to a first-year law student. Can you give me a brief overview of what practicing antitrust law is?
Sure. And there are different dimensions to the practice. And so, I think it's helpful to sort of compartmentalize them into, if you're a litigation associate, as distinct from working on a counseling matter, as distinct from working on, let's say, a transaction like a merger that is contested by the agencies in Washington It may require work from an associate. So as a litigation associate, you could be doing document review on a major case is certainly likely to be part of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably the least glamorous part of what you're doing. But I will say this to anybody who wants to litigate big-time litigation and who rues the idea of actually rolling up his or her sleeves and reading documents. At the end of the day, in antitrust cases, those who are most adept at shaping the facts, understanding the industry, commanding those details, they're the people who prevail. And so, finding the key documents in every major case winnows down to, a few hundred documents. While it's not glamorous work, it's critically important towards the development of a top-tier case, whether it be for expert reports, for depositions, for dispositive motions. So in your first couple of years, you're likely going to be doing, you're put on a litigation that's hot and heavy, a document review. You will likely be doing research on issues of law. They could be issues of antitrust law if there's a substantive motion. It could be issues of civil procedure if there are discovery issues. The issues of law could be substantive antitrust issues or other issues of law that may arise in the context of contested litigation. You may be tasked with developing deposition kits for offensive discovery that's being taken against the adversary, or defensive discovery, will be taken of your client. Well, you'll be helping a partner or a senior associate prepare to take or defend a deposition. You may get involved in either. You may come to the deposition and see how the questions are, see how your review of documents and outline then results in the questioning of a witness, or in the preparation of a witness for questioning by the other side. And if you're lucky, maybe you get to take a deposition or defend one, although years 1 to 2, that's probably not likely. So those are some of the things you'll do with a litigation associate. Now, if you're working on a big transaction and there's a second request to the Department of Justice or the FTC, where they're asking for materials to be turned over as part of their investigation, you again may end up having to do document review or supervised document review towards that process. You may get involved in the development of what's called a white paper, which is like an industry analysis that's often submitted with the help of an economist, but sometimes, if not always, in support of whatever narrative the merging parties are telling to the Justice Department or the FTC regarding why the merger is pro-competitive, why it shouldn't be blocked. And that could involve factual research, could involve writing portions of the white paper. And I should say, as a litigation associate, you may get to write research memos and portions of briefs as well. I should have added that to the litigation side. And you may get to write portions of a white paper in a contested merger. On the counseling side, you may get involved in compliance programs that a partner may be putting together for a company, antitrust compliance programs, resale price maintenance programs. There are various compliance questions that from time to time an antitrust lawyer might get. That may require some research and development of do's and don'ts and those kinds of things that an antitrust lawyer may prepare for a company to make sure that it stays on the right side of the antitrust law.
Okay.
So those are some of the things a junior associate would do.
Okay. And in your opinion, I know this is a difficult question, what's the most interesting or rewarding aspect of your practice?
Well, I like the economics. I like commanding the industry, and I made the point earlier on about shaping the facts and understanding the industry. And so what attracted me to antitrust law and has kept me interested in doing this is the ability to really understand the strategic pulse of industries, and then, you know, shape that towards, you know, a legal outcome, whatever it would be. It could be a litigation, it could be a merger, you know, it could be advocating to the Justice Department to issue civil investigation demands with respect to a particular practice. And so understanding the industry and understanding the economics, excuse me, is, I find, very rewarding. And as an adjunct to that, I really enjoy working with the experts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that in most of what we do, this includes litigation, but also is usually the case in a regulatory proceeding in Washington in front of the agencies, that you'll need an economist, you know, who's an industrial organization, you know, expert, you know, a microeconomist, to support your damage theory, your liability theory. And I spent a lot of time working with some of the brightest economists, you know, economists in the country on our cases. And I enjoy that. I enjoy shaping their reports, shaping their testimony, taking, you know, the deposition of an economist and, you know, taking apart their reports is, you know, was deeply rewarding. I've had that experience defending them. You know, it's stressful but also rewarding. And so I've gotten a lot of, you know, pleasure out of becoming, you know, an expert in different industries and working with some very, very top-notch economists in doing so.
And what advice would you have for a student who's interested in getting started in a career in antitrust law?
I mean, the best advice I can give, you know, if you really want to sort of do this long run, is you know, get to know, you know, specific industries, target the industries you're interested in, and develop sort of subspecializations beneath the antitrust specialization that you're going to develop. And so, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at the lawyers, you know, have been doing this for 20 or 30 years, who are developing an independent book of business. And one thing I'll say to anyone, if you want to do this long run, you know, you want to develop your own networks, your own contacts. It's never too early to start networking and developing those contacts so that you're the rainmaker. This is what you want to do long run. And to become that kind of rainmaker in an antitrust context, subspecialization in industries is enormously helpful. And so there are industries that are rife with antitrust issues just because of their intrinsic characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've spent a lot of time in the payment space. You know, my practice includes financial services, energy, high tech, telecommunications, healthcare, some of these things I do, some of these things my partners specialize in. These are areas the firm itself specializes in, and a bunch of them I've developed specializations of my own in. And when you develop the degree of fluency and depth over, and it takes time, and it requires, you know, tapping into the, you know, the trade press, the various materials that surround any given industry, or you become conversant in what, you know, the issues of the day, going to conferences, you know, getting in LinkedIn groups that have specializations. There's lots of things, you know, using Twitter and social media in this generation. There's lots of ways to, you know, skin the cat, if you will, to get to that level. It takes time, but in the long run, that's what you need. You know, if you look long run where you want to be, get towards there, developing subspecializations. So you're not just an antitrust lawyer, but like for me, I'm a payments lawyer now. You know, I've spent a lot of time litigating and counseling in the payment space. And, you know, I have that expertise, and, know, it's an expertise that is a differentiator that's quite valuable in terms of, you know, giving clients the kind of top shelf service they need. And a lot of clients will say this day and age, they're hiring lawyers, not necessarily law firms. And you want to be that lawyer. You know, if this is what you really want to be doing, you want to be that lawyer, that's how you get there.
That's good advice. Related to that, are there any professional associations or organizations that you think a student should join to get exposure to antitrust?
Well, there's the ABA antitrust section. It's obviously a good place to start. And the spring meeting, you know, is an annual ritual for pretty much everyone in the antitrust bar. And it's a great place to network. So every year I go and I meet people, you know, from around the United States, you know, corporations that have, you know, continuing antitrust issues usually send people there. Lawyers from Europe usually go, and lawyers from Asia, lawyers from Canada. So networking in that fashion through the ABA is, you know, is valuable. That's the one that I've used probably the most. And outside of that, I've spent a lot of time at conferences, you know, and I generally go to things that I'm speaking at. And so a lot of industry conferences become sort of routine for me. That's something that people would develop over time. It was part of the, you know, the specialization I was just talking about. The New York State Bar Association has an active antitrust section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good group. The New York City Bar Association is a pretty good group. I've gotten a lot out of my involvement in the American Antitrust Institute, which is a fantastic organization out of Washington that is unique in its sort of singular focus on, you know, invigorating the antitrust law and using it in ways that, you know, post-Chicago school have increasingly been disfavored, and, you know, finding very useful ways to contribute towards re-energizing the enforcement of antitrust in areas where it's languished. The AAI has been great. You know, just last week I spoke at an energy forum sponsored by the AAI because the firm is involved in some issues in the energy space. So that's another organization that I would commend to people if they're practicing in the U.S.
Okay. And then in terms of coursework, and this may be going back a little bit too far, but are there courses you wish you had taken when you were in the LLM program? And relatedly, when you look at resumes of people who are interested in working in antitrust law, are there courses that you think are very important for them to have taken?
I actually don't have any regrets in terms of what I took at NYU because I found, antitrust and intellectual property was a course I took. That was enormously valuable because the intersection of antitrust and IP is a complex and critically important area. And I took the course and it gave me grounding. Antitrust and government regulation. I remember Professor First taught that class. Great class. And that is a huge area that, you know, I'm currently living. And, you know, and I felt like I got a good grounding. And that's a course that, if it still exists, I would highly recommend. I took, you know, European, you know, EC law. And, you know, we've opened an office in London and I do some stuff over there. And having some grounding in European law and how the EU law functions with national law was, you know, something that's been, you know, valuable to me. And I'm sure there are other courses. You know, you're right, it's going back a while, but I certainly remember antitrust and IP, antitrust and government regulation as areas. And as a general proposition, you know, the economics are, you know, is critically important. You know, and every meaningful antitrust issue that one can study, you know, whether it involve a Microsoft or a Google or the Visa MasterCard work that we've done a lot of, telecommunications industries, whether, it's issues of network effects or vertical foreclosure, you name it, you've got to have monopoly and deadweight loss. You've got to have a grounding in economics. You've got to have some savvy in industrial organization economics. You don't necessarily need to have a PhD in economics. I didn't. I came to NYU having taken economics as an undergrad, having done some antitrust work, as I noted at the outset, in Canada. But that was it. But I have to say I have an intuitive feel for the economics that served me well throughout. It's enabled me to work with experts pretty effectively. And you've got to be able to understand, those issues at a high level if you're going to practice this in this area long run.
Okay. And are there lead publications in the field or websites or other sources that you read regularly and think a student should read regularly in order to become conversant in these issues?
I love Antitrust Magazine. And it's a very high-level, intellectual and thoughtful and peer-reviewed source. I published them there once, and they really put you through the ringer, and nothing gets in there unless, it's vetted 10 times over again. And there are always deep discussions of the issues, and so if you want to really get depth, that's a good place. Antitrust Law Review. I mean, our read on Hovenkamp, in terms of doing research, and, if you're that first or second year associate, and you're tapped to look at, that's always a great, great place to start. Really surround an issue. So those are some other, some of the sources, that I look at. And as I said earlier on, I read the trade press because, understanding what's going on in an industry and, staying current in that respect is hugely important. And so you need to, to both develop the intellectual artillery of understanding antitrust law and the economics and the issues that surround it, but then you got to connect it to what's going on in industries. And to do that effectively, you need to know what's going on in industries. You need to know what Google's doing if you're interested in high tech. Not to pick on Google, but just throw out a name that everyone knows. It's under serious investigation in Europe. Without getting into the issues, if that's something you're interested in, understanding what it's doing and what, and how it may be impacting competition and staying abreast of the trade sources is enormously valuable. It's time consuming, but it's should be part of your workflow.
Okay. Now shifting to a major topic for our LLM's job search strategies, I'm going to ask you a few questions about your experience finding a job post-LLM and what recommendations you may have for our students. I know you talked about this a little bit at the beginning, but how did you find your job post-LLM?
Well, NYU was hugely helpful to me. The Career Development Office was great. And, Constantine Cannon, then Constantine and Associates, it posted an ad in the NYU Career Development Office that I saw. I had used the NYU systems. The specifics of exactly what I leveraged, I don't remember, to get me interviews, at the Scadens of the world. And then I saw Constantine Cannon. And as I noted earlier on, I did due diligence assisted by Eleanor Fox and Harry Furst.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so valuable to have, you got two great antitrust minds who have, enormous experience in the industry. They knew Lloyd, they understood, they understood his history and, the kind of litigator he was. It was very helpful, and it gave me a good perspective going into the interview. So leveraging from my own experience to some of the things I could say to people, you know, like ask yourself some basic questions as you consider your career path. Do you want to litigate? Do you want to counsel? Do you want to handle transactions like, you know, major mergers and advocate for, you know, transactions into agencies? You know, there are different, they're very different career paths that are implied by those choices. And, you know, they're demand, you know, they're demands, you know, it's a demanding career no matter what you do. You know, but that's an entry level, you know, sort of predicate question that you need to sort of sort through. Do you want to be at a big firm? Do you want to come to a place like this? And there are pros and cons, to be totally fair. The big firms, some of them are exceptionally good at having in-house training programs. For litigators, for example, there are sort of trial lawyer boot camp kinds of things that are internally done at some of the big shops that we don't do. We send people off to NIDA, which is the National Institute of Trial Advocates. Great programs, by the way, that your students should be aware of as they learn how to take depositions or actually the skills for trial. But, you know, if you want the institutionalized in-house programs and you want a structure and that gives you comfort, and some people like that better, then a big firm may be for you. Whereas if you'd rather have a less structured, you know, possibly more entrepreneurial and freewheeling environment, a firm like this may be better for you. These are the kind of questions you need to ask yourselves. What are you looking for? Do you want to be doing this long run? Do you want to use a big firm as a stepping stone to getting an in-house position at a major corporation? Some people do that. These are things to think about because they imply different directions in terms of the kinds of firms you're going to want to interview at and ultimately land in.
Okay. And as an employer, what job search methods do you find most effective? I mean, how do candidates come across your desk?
Multiple sources, some directly through the career development offices of the major law schools like NYU, some through headhunters if they're laterals, some through word of mouth channels.
Mm-hmm.
It runs a gamut. You know, entry levels tend not to work through headhunters. Or put differently, I think headhunters tend to work with laterals. And so it's more of a direct effort. We've also hired people, in some instances, we hire college students as paralegals. You get a 21-year-old kid who's hungry to be, to get an experience of what it's like to work at a law firm, but doesn't necessarily know if he or she wants to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great thing to do. I know your students are older than that, but this happened where you have a 21 or 22-year-old college student, they're just great paralegals, and then they go, love this, go to law school, we keep in touch, and then they come back to us. So that's happened too, which is very, very rewarding. We're a smaller firm, and so, culture matters. Culture matters everywhere, but it particularly matters in a smaller firm. That we like to, we try to treat people well, respect that people need to have a life and have some balance. But when necessary, if you're going to do this, either as a litigator or in a transactional context, you're going to work hard. Demanding. And there are times where it's going to be demanding.
And do you have any interviewing tips for antitrust positions? Anything that you really like to hear in interviews? Is there any sort of common pitfalls that you have encountered in interviewing people interested in positions in the field?
I haven't heard common pitfalls. I mean, I like to see some intellectual depth when speaking to someone, especially if they're an entry level. So I can tell when I'm interviewing someone who has just a superficial interest in antitrust.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really have a thoughtful answer to the question, well, why are you interested in antitrust law? You know, this is a very demanding, intellectually demanding area of the law. And without talking up the antitrust bar too much, you know, it's the economics can be very complex. You know, the issues require, as I've said over and over again, a degree of command of the industries. It requires depth. And look, in an entry-level interview, I wouldn't expect anyone to bring to the table the kind of depth that you have after you've been living something for 5 or 10 years, certainly. But, you know, some threshold sense that this is a person who's really going to get into this, you know, and has a passion for it. Because if you don't, I can sniff that out a mile away. And so that's certainly something that we look for. You know, it doesn't necessarily, I ask people if they've taken economics, and you get answers. Sometimes people have got a PhD, you know, or at least majored, sometimes not. And if the answer is you haven't, that doesn't necessarily disqualify you from being a great antitrust lawyer.
Entry-level phase, do you expect students to have a sense of what industries they are interested in focusing on? You've talked quite a few times about sort of keeping up on trade publications and knowing what's going on in the industry, sort of having a business sense. Is that something you expect people to develop over the course of their career, or sort of know at the outset?
More over the course of their careers. But if someone is looking to differentiate themselves, there's not often that I've seen someone come in for an entry-level interview and display, some command of the issues in a particular industry. That's an awful lot to expect, and I don't expect it. But if anyone out there, I mean, you should be, you know, looking for differentiators that are intrinsic to you. You know, if it's something that's forced, a good interviewer will figure that out. The tips to be, in any interview, first tip, be yourself. Just be yourself. And the people, if being themselves lends towards, you know, I have a background in whatever, in computers such that I understand, you know, the ins and outs of this particular issue, and I could see it being a particularly useful, you know, area for an antitrust firm to focus on, if you focus on it or if you don't. You know, I find that interesting in an interview, but I just wanted to reiterate, I wouldn't expect that in an entry-level interview.
Okay. And then just a final question. What qualities and qualifications does your firm look for in a candidate, and more specifically, how do you view academic performance and prior work experience? Lots of our LLMs, as you know, do have some prior work experience.
We're looking at the total package. So I don't remember ever looking at someone with, like, say, average grades and saying, nah, we don't want this person. If he or she had had clerked, or had worked for an international organization, or done something else over the course of there, and we've seen lots of different resumes. Often, if not always, they're interesting in different ways. Writing samples are very important, so pick your writing sample carefully. Writing is a very important portion of this practice. We need people who can write, who can research thoroughly. There's nothing better than having associates 3, 4, 5 years, when they get to that level where they know how to research, they know how to write, they understand the law, and you can give them an issue and they'll nail it and give you something that's well written. And so writing samples are very important. So select those very carefully. But I don't have a view as to whether I would elevate academic performance over other things that sort of go towards a holistic view of the person who's
okay.
sitting in front of us.
Thank you. That's really helpful. This has been tremendously helpful. Thank you so much for your time and your careful consideration of these questions.
It's a pleasure, and I wish everyone best of luck, and I'm happy to talk offline with anyone who wants to follow up with me.
Okay, terrific. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Okay, Sarah.
The podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening.